Okay, Parshas Ekev, everybody, in 5779, it's Perk Yud Pasuk Vav. We have a very strange Pasuk. It says, B'nai Yisrael nasim b'Eros b'nai Yakan Mosera. B'nai Yisrael traveled from B'Eros b'nai Yakan to Mosera, to Moser. Shammei Saron, that's where Aaron died, V'yikavir Shammei, he was buried there. V'achein Elazar b'no Tachtav, and Elazar's son became Kohen instead of him. Misham nasu agud goda, from there, from that area called Mosera, seemingly, they traveled to Gud Goda. Min Gud Goda yatvasa, Eretz Nachlei Mayim, a land that's filled with water. So it's a very strange thing. There are three major issues that they take, that Chazal take with these psukim. The first problem is, they seem completely out of place. We're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu making the luchos, and then all of a sudden we switch off to, oh, by the way, they traveled one place to the other and Aaron died. Why are we talking about the broken luchos and all of a sudden Aaron's death? Number two, we said in Parshas Maaseh, they went the opposite way. They went from Mosera to B'nai Yakan. Here we're saying they went from B'nai Yakan to Mosera. That's strange. Why would it go the opposite way? That's number two. Thirdly, this is not where Aaron HaKohen died. Everybody knows where Aaron HaKohen died. Aaron HaKohen died on Hor HaHor. He died on the mountain of mountains, the mountain on top of another mountain. That's where he passed away. But here it says he died in Mosera. So what does that mean? What's the idea over here that we're trying to say that he died in Mosera when really he died in Hor HaHor? So Rashi says this is all part of the Tochacha. All of this is part of the Musa the Moshe Rabbeinu was giving to Klal Yisrael. Aaron died on Hor HaHor. He was buried in a cave on top of the double mountain, right? Mountain on top of a mountain. That's why it's called Hor HaHor. He died on top of that somewhere on the east side of the Jordan River. And at that moment, that Nani HaKavod that had been with them the entire time, those clouds of glory that had been with them every single time up until that point, for 40 years, 39 and a half years, all of a sudden disappeared. They were gone. And they found themselves open to attack from all around. The Kenani or Amalek or Sichon, whoever it was, came to attack them. And Bnei Yisrael was scared out of their mind. They didn't know what to do. They were sitting there saying, what do we do? What do we do? Right? We don't have the Anani HaKavod to protect us anymore. What are we supposed to do? So what did they do? A group of Bnei Yisrael traveled backward. They traveled backward to go back to Mitzrayim. Instead of going forward, they went back to get away from the armies that were coming against them, to try to get away from them. That's what happened. In fact, they went so far, they traveled 8 masos back to Mosera. If we count backward from where they were in Hor HaHor, 8 masos back was Mosera, and that's when Bnei Levi caught up with them. The Bnei Levi were sent by Moshe Rabbeinu to go catch up with them, to stop them from going where they were going. And there was a large-scale civil war, an actual civil war, where the Bnei Levi fought against these people that were defecting back to Mitzrayim, said, what are you doing? Get back here. They fought back against Shevet Levi, the deserters that were coming back. They fought against Bnei Levi itself. Eventually, Bnei Levi gained the upper hand and forced them to come back with them to where they were in Hor HaHor, right? In Parshas Maaseh, that was Choda, Gud Goda, and whatever it was. And now they were on their way back. When that happened, that's when they gave a new hesped for Aaron HaKohen. That's what ended up happening over here. It's the strangest thing in the world. This is a civil war. Bnei Levi fought against the rest of Klal Yisrael, and we only get this pasuk that barely hints to it. Rashi tells us that many people were killed. Many, there were shvatim that were almost wiped out from this war. And yet nonetheless, we only get this from a medrash that happens over here. When they came back to Mosera, they thought to themselves, what did we do wrong? How did HaKadosh Baruch Hu allow this to happen? This civil war where thousands of people died. How did HaKadosh Baruch Hu let this happen? How could it be? What did we do wrong to deserve such a bloody civil war? They realized they must not have mourned Aaron properly, says Rashi. They didn't mourn Aaron properly. So they put together another large-scale hesped and levaya for Aaron HaKohen. And it felt like Aaron had just passed away for them. They walked, they gave a hesped, they talked about Aaron HaKohen, and they did everything. And therefore, it's as if he died in Mosera. And that's what it means. Sham meis Aaron v'yikaver sham. There Aaron died and he was buried there, even though he was actually buried in Hor HaHor. Since the real hesped happened over here in Mosera, everything was completely different. The Rabbeinu Bachai is another version where they mourned over all the people that died and also Aaron. They added on Aaron. But nonetheless, the concept is still there that they did this. This is all brought in the Yerushalmi. At the end of the first parak of Maseches Sota, it's in parak Daf Chesma Beis in the Yerushalmi and Sota. The Yerushalmi adds on details. He says 5 families from Shevet Binyamin were completely destroyed. 5 families completely destroyed and nothing left of them. They were all completely destroyed, as well as Itzvan of Gad. Yishva of Asher and Ehud of Shimon. The reason why we know that is because in Parshas Pinchas, when it goes through the numbers, it doesn't mention any of these families. None of these families are mentioned over there. Shevet Levi lost four families. There were four families from Shevet Levi. Shimi's family was entirely wiped out. Amram, Yitzhar, and Uziel's family, aside obviously from Moshe and Aaron, were also wiped out. There were families that were entirely wiped out that until the days of David and Melech, they couldn't recover from this. That's how many people died in this war between themselves, not from Amalek and not from Sichon, but rather from themselves. That's how many people died over here. It's a very strange medrash. Very, very strange medrash. And there's an even bigger question here. So everybody asks the following question. When I mean everybody, I mean all the Achronim ask the following question. They say, if this is true, that they only gave the Hesped later on in Mosera and not in Hor HaHor, we have a straight out Gemara that argues with that. Because it says, when Aaron passed away in Parshas Chukas, Parakov Pasachov Tes, it says, Vayivkuas Aaron Shloshim Yom, they cried for Aaron all 30 days, Kol Beis Yisrael, all of Beis Yisrael. And Rashi comments over there, it's not just the men that cried for Aaron, it's the men and the women that cried for Aaron, because all of them loved the fact that Aaron was an Oiv Shalom Verodev Shalom, a person who ran after peace, who chased after peace, who loved Shalom and did everything he could to keep everyone together. If everyone cried over him for 30 days, possibly more, I don't understand. And that was more than what they did for Moshe Rabbeinu. What did they do wrong? They said that the reason why this happened was because we didn't give a hesped to Aaron properly. But they did. They mourned him more than they did for Moshe Rabbeinu. 30 days in which all men and women felt the pain of Aaron being dead. So what else did you want from them? How could they have done that wrong? To me, it doesn't make any sense. That's what they ask in Rashi. How could that be? So the Riddal, Rav David Luria, in the Pirkei to Rebbe Eliezer, asks this question in Os Yud and Perek Yud Zayin. And he says the following. He suggests that the mourning, the period of 30 days, was not immediately after Aaron's death. After Aaron's death, after Aaron HaKohen died in Rosh Chodesh Av, they didn't mourn him immediately. Instead, they saw the impending war, they realized that Amalek and Kavod were gone, and they ran immediately. They got out wherever they were, they ran immediately, they didn't mourn. They ran out as soon as they could. Shevet Levi, who should have been in the midst of mourning for Aaron HaKohen, they ran after them, and they pulled them back, and they realized it's because they didn't mourn immediately. They should have done it. So did they do 30 days? Yeah, they did 30 days after they got brought back. After the people were caught and after they had been brought back. They should have had trust, they should have had some type of bitachon or emunah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu that everything was going to be taken care of, and it didn't go through. The Bi'am Lo'ei says they did mourn for 30 days, but they didn't mourn Aaron's death. They mourned the loss of the Anane HaKavod. They mourned what they had lost because Aaron died. And that's not proper avelus. Because they didn't do proper avelus, that's why they got punished. But it was a huge bracha. At this point, says the Panim Yafos Afla, Moshe Rabbeinu had stopped davening for Klal Yisrael. When they do something wrong, Moshe Rabbeinu is no longer there for them. Up until this point, up until the 40th year of the Midbar, Moshe was constantly there for them. They did something wrong with the Ego Azov, Moshe davens. Shlach, with the Meraglim, Moshe Rabbeinu davens. Even by Korach, Moshe Rabbeinu davens and brings the Ketores to stop the Magepha. But here, Moshe Rabbeinu is no longer davening for them. Had they not done this, had they not mourned Aaron properly, it could be they would have lost even more. There would have been another Magepha, another plague. But Baruch Hashem, that didn't happen because they caught themselves and realized what they had done wrong, and they mourned Aaron. Maybe a little bit late, maybe a little bit belated, but not that. I think that's a huge chiddush. Whether you go with Rav David Luria or the Mi'am Lo'ei, or even this edition of the Panim Yafos, that means, again, they didn't mourn Aaron for 30 days immediately after Aaron's death. They mourned for Aaron afterward, later on, when they realized they had done something wrong. That's a chiddush to me. That's a big chiddush. It doesn't sound that way from Rashi, but it certainly does answer this steer on Rashi's. Rashi brings this medrash that they didn't mourn Aaron properly, and then also says that they mourned him for 30 days. It sounds like they did it a little bit later. The Kli Yakar asks a bunch of questions on this medrash, and he says the following, and it's a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant answer. The reason why the water stopped flowing after Miriam died, we know this, it's because tzaddikim are called Mayan HaMisgaber, a spring that strengthens itself. A dollar for anybody who can mention who's the Mayan HaMisgaber and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's Talmidim and Perek Beis of Perek Yavos. It's a hard one. I will give you that one. You know who it is? It's Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkinus. He's a Mayan HaMisgaber. He would have been there. Rabbi Elazar, yeah. Either way, he's a mayan of Iskabar, a spring that constantly flows forth and replenishes itself and goes further and further and further. When someone forgets to eulogize a great tzaddik or a tzaddikus that passed away, when a great tzaddik passed away and something happens, it makes sense that mida keneged mida, if you don't eulogize them, you'll lose your water supply. If you forget that he's the one that gave you everything, that gave you the water, whether that refers to Torah or Shefa from Shemaim or whatever, but he's the one that's giving you everything, and you forget that and you don't think about that, then it makes sense that your mayan, your spring, dries up. That makes a lot of sense. Miriam was buried so quickly that they didn't eulogize her properly and they lost their water supply. So too over here, when Aaron passed away, they're worried about two things. Number one, the first thing we're worried about is that the water supply was going to dry up. Just like it happened by Miriam, they were afraid that was going to happen over here as well. Once Aaron died, the mayan was going to go away. Number two, they were afraid of war. Because the Ananiah covered went away, they were worried about what was going to happen to them. And that, we've already says the Kli Yakar, they were worried about both of those things. For that reason, they traveled backward, because they're afraid of the war. But they strategically went to areas that were filled with water. If you look at the wording of the Pasuk, the wording of the Pasuk is, B'nei Yisrael Nasu, Mi Be'eros B'nei Yakan. Not from B'nei Yakan, from the wellsprings of B'nei Yakan. And they went to Mosera. They went first to get water. They replenished all their water supplies. They filled their jugs filled with water. And anything they could, flasks, anything they had, they filled up with water. And then they traveled Gudgodim and Gudgod Yatvasa, Eretz Nachlei Mayim, to a land that was flowing with water. Because they were worried about both things. Number one, they ran backward, says the Kli Yakar, because they were afraid of war, impending war against the Canaan. But they also were afraid of losing water, so they specifically went to areas that were filled with water to make sure they would not have the same issue that they had with Miriam. They went straight back to certain springs, wells, whatever it was, to be able to get as much water as they possibly had. When they arrived at Mosera, they saw there was not enough water for them. They had from Be'er Zmeni Akam, they went to Eretz Nachlei Mayim, but right in the middle, by Mosera, they had a problem. They didn't see any water. So they purposely made a huge hesped for Aaron, not because they missed Aaron, that's the way the Kli Yakar is saying it, but because they didn't want to lose the water. So they made a huge hesped to make sure that they would get as much water as they could and that the water wouldn't be diminished in any way because the tzaddik had gone away. That's the idea behind it. It was 100% their fault. It was a problem when it went through. What was the real issue? Elazar was there. Elazar was the son of Aaron HaKohen. Elazar HaKohen was a tremendous tzaddik. He was made the new Kohen Gadol. He was a child who truly fit his father's shoes. There should have been water in his merit. But Bnei Yisrael didn't think that way. They didn't treat Elazar the same way they treated Aaron. They thought they were going to lose a ton of water, and therefore, it was a problem. They went straight to those areas of water itself. Says the Kli Yakar, that's the idea behind the Pesukim, and it's a brilliant pshat, because it is strange that it mentions Eretz Nachlei Mayim, and that it switches Bnei Yakan to Be'eris Bnei Yakan. And he says it's because they were looking for something, because they were worried about what was going to happen. The Chassam Sofer says, on page, in his drushos, Chelik Beis, page 384, the Levium brought with them, when they went out to war against the rest of Bnei Yisrael, they brought the Shivrei Luchos, and here's why. At the times when Moshe Rabbeinu was in charge, you didn't use the Urim Bitumen. The Urim Bitumen was only used after Yoshua passed away. Now, the Urim Bitumen was used to be able to give them the Gorelos, so that to show that nobody had any, it wasn't a human decision, it was a godly decision. But the Urim Bitumen was used in full capacity by the Kohanim only after Moshe and Yoshua passed away, because you didn't need it. Yoshua and Moshe had that direct conversation with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Yoshua not to that extent, but almost as much as Moshe Rabbeinu. So they didn't have the Urim Bitumen. The Urim Bitumen was only used then, and it was used all the way up until the times of Dovid and Shlomo, at least maybe until the end of the first base of Mikdash, but the Urim Bitumen was used up until that point. The Levium didn't need Urim Bitumen. They brought the Shivrei Luchos with them. When the Aron, holding the Shivrei Luchos, which there's a machlokus, but some say that there was a separate Aron holding the Shivrei Luchos, the broken pieces of the Luchos. When they picked it up and it came with them, when they wanted to go fight against Bnei Yisrael, they realized Hashem was with them, that Hashem wanted this to happen. They didn't want to fight a civil war. Who wants to fight a war against your brothers? Who wants to go up against your brothers and fight against them? That's ridiculous. Nobody wants to do that. But when they saw the Shivrei Luchos pick themselves up and came with them, they realized this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do. fine, this is what we're going to do. And they actually got up with them. They went and they did what they needed to do. As for why HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it to happen, that's what the other Rishonim were saying, because they didn't eulogize Aaron properly. But the idea that they went, why'd they go? Because of the Shibrei Luchos, because those broken pieces showed them what they were supposed to do in here. All of that is according to Rashi. That was all according to Rashi's idea, based on this Medrash, that they went backward. But that's not all the Rishonim. The Ibn Ezra, the Das Sakanim says, they don't think this Medrash works in Pshat in the Pasuk. This Medrash doesn't work that way. It says the word Shum. Shum covered with Aaron. They buried Aaron there. But you compare Shum Aaron. Aaron is buried there. How could you say that that's horror, right? When we're talking about Moser over here, that doesn't make any sense. So says the Das Sakanim, says the Ibn Ezra, Be'eros B'nei Yakan, that area that we have over here, is not B'nei Yakan. It's not. Be'eros B'nei Yakan were the wells for the people of B'nei Yakan, and it's really the city of Kedesh. Kedesh is around the area of Horahor. And therefore, when they say that Aaron was buried there, he's not buried in B'nei Yakan, he's buried in Be'eros B'nei Yakan, which is the city of Kedesh, which is right by Horahor. That's what he says, that it's really that place. Gud Goda is not Choda Gud God. It's not the same place. It's a different place. There are different areas, an area with Salmona and Punos and Punon and Ovos, etc. So really these areas that we're mentioning that sound like the same cities over there in Chukas are not the same cities. That's how they understand it. As for each city, why it was called that way, etc., there's an Itziv. There is an Itziv that goes through it, and there's a tour as well. But it's strange. It's a strange pshat altogether. The Ramban says this is all Divrei Ruach. Divrei Ruach. How can you say it's a... Yatvasa is not the same Yatvasa. Chora Gud God is not the same thing as Gud Goda. Mosera is not the same thing as Moseros. And B'nei Yakan is not the same thing as Be'eros B'nei Yakan. Does that not sound ridiculous? That's ridiculous. Why would it be? It's the exact same names, and yet it's referring to another city. Says the Ramban, that can't be. So he gives a massive chiddush. And again, this deal geographically, you'd have to know whether this is true or not. He says Horahor is a string of mountains. It's one long mountain range. And in that mountain range, there are cities at the foot of the entire mountain. The way the mountain range goes, there are cities at the foot of every single one. Moseros is there, B'nei Yakan is there, Chor Gigot is there, Yotvas is there, Evrona, Etzion Gaver, and Kadesh. They're all cities on the bottom of the huge mountain range called Horahor. And the reason why it was called Horahor is not because it was a mountain on top of a mountain. That's the famous mountain on top of a mountain. That's where Aaron was buried. It's because it was the mountain of mountains. It was the biggest mountain range around there. And because of that, it was called Horahor. And one of those areas, that's where Aaron was buried. Where was he buried? On the part of the mountain opposite Mosera. Do you get it? They might have actually been in Kadesh at the time. But you can look, just simply put on a map. If Kadesh is right over here, and they went up to this part of the mountain, and they buried Aaron there, that also is opposite Mosera. It was a little bit further back from where they were before on the ground. But up above, it could have been exactly equidistant to where Mosera was. So says the Ramban, when it says that Mosera, that's where Aaron was buried, it's because it's dealing with perspective. From the perspective where B'nai Yisrael were camped at the time, they were in Kadesh. So therefore, it felt like Horahor was by them. But really, it was closer to Mosera. That's the area where Aaron was actually buried, and that's what our Pasuk was saying over here. He says, that's the idea of what happened. Did they actually go backward? Did they get scared from war? Did they fight each other in a civil war? Says the Ramban, that's a medrash. That's not necessarily the pshat behind the pasuk. In pshat of the pasuk, B'nai Yisrael didn't move. They stayed there, but where he was buried was opposite Mosera, and that's what this pasuk is talking about, which is a brilliant move. Again, you have to know geographically if that works with what it is. The Ramban would tell you this is a drush anyway, a way of understanding the pasuk. Just what the mountain ranges were back then, I have absolutely no idea. As for B'nai Yakan, he says there were wells that were near B'nai Yakan, that were near Hashmona, etc. He goes into another idea as well. And this is Rashbam. It says you're not reading it out of order. It's completely in order. It's a different way of reading it altogether. But that's the Rashbam. But either way, why is this pasuk put here? Why is it here? As we said before, we just talked about Moshe Rabbeinu talking about the luchos. He made the luchos. He broke the luchos. And all of a sudden we talk about Aaron's death. Why are they put over here? So the Ibn Ezra, the Chizkuni, Paneach Raza, and the Ramban all suggest that what happened by the Luchos? Why were the Luchos broken in the first place? Well, we all know. The Luchos were broken because Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai, saw the Egel Azov, and immediately broke the Luchos, saying, Bnei Yisrael don't deserve it. That's Aaron's fault. Aaron HaKohen was the reason for why the Luchos were broken. So maybe you'd say that Aaron deserves to die. Maybe Aaron should die right after the Luchos were broken. Maybe that's what should happen right then. Maybe that's what should happen at that moment. No, absolutely not. Aaron lived for another 39 years because he was such a tzaddik and he did everything l'shem shamayim. And Moshe Rabbeinu davened for him. Because Moshe Rabbeinu davened for him and because he was such a tzaddik and because he did things l'shem shamayim, therefore there was no worry about such a thing. Says the Chizkuni, says the Panach Raz, the Ramban, and the Ibn Ezra, they all say the exact same thing. The reason why this pasuk is here is to tell us, no matter what you've done, it doesn't matter what you've done. Anything you've done, you can always do tshuva for it. You can always daven for it. Because look what happened to Aaron. Is there anything worse than causing Klal Yisrael to do the Egel Azov? And yet he lived another 39 and a half years. 39 and a half years. Because he did tshuva, Moshe davened for him, and because he meant it l'shem shamayim. Even if it was an Avera, it was still meant l'shem shamayim, he was able to live. That's what these Rishonim say. It's an awesome, awesome idea. The Rashbam says it as well. 39 years were added to his life from Moshe's tefillah. That shows you the power of the tefillah of such a tzaddik. The Sforno says, again, there was muster involved in this. And the Sforno says, when Aaron was dying, there were some people in Klal Yisrael who paid no attention. They said, you know what? He deserves it. You remember the Egel Azov? He deserves it. Says the Sforno, there were people that Mamish they didn't care. While the Levaya was going on and they were bringing Aaron's body to Hor HaHor, where he wasn't dead yet, he died on Hor HaHor, but while they were, Aaron was traveling up with Moshe, and the rest of Klal Yisrael was looking up, crying, with their faces in shock, Aaron HaKohen is going to die before we go to Eretz Yisrael. They're all sitting there saying, what just happened? How is this happening? There were some people who said, eh. And they walked with their sheep, and they were grazing by Moseira. That's all they were doing. They didn't care. They mamish didn't care. They could care less if such a thing happened. So what? All right, so Aaron died. What's the big deal? And when they were giving their hespedim, they stayed in the Midbar. They stayed in that area right over there. They didn't rush back. They slowly came back. And when there was inauguration for Elazar HaKohen, Elazar was just made the Kohen Gadol. That was an auspicious time for all of Klal Yisrael. Everybody got together. They stood at the Mishkan. They watched Elazar do the Avoda for the very first time without his father around. And everybody's looking and everybody's watching. These people didn't come back for it. Says the Sforno, that was the Musa that Moshe Rabbeinu was saying to them. Moshe Rabbeinu turned to them and said, how could you not go? How could you not see this? Instead, you stayed out in the Midbar and you did your own thing? How dare you? How could you do such a thing? That was the Musa that he gave them. And that's why it's like the Luchos were broken all over again. You think Aaron is to blame for this? It's Klal Yisrael's fault. And it's Klal Yisrael's fault again for allowing such a thing to happen. That's what happened. Aksava Kabbalah says, he says, this Sforno works better than any other drush. It makes the most sense in Pshat in the Pasuk that that's what happened over here. That there were just other people that just didn't care. And Moshe Rabbeinu is yelling at them, how could you not care that Aaron had passed away? It's like you're breaking the Luchos themselves. Dimyam Loez points out that there were two types of Ashkacha that Moshe Rabbeinu had to point out to them here. Two types of Ashkacha. To show them that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was with them no matter what. Number one was the fact that Elazar was made Kohen Gadol in his father's stead. That's number one. Elazar was made Kohen Gadol in his father's stead. Never think that you're alone, said Moshe Rabbeinu. Even when someone dies, and a great tzaddik, a patriarch of the family, somebody great passes away, there's always someone who can take his place. Maybe not as great. Maybe not as well as the first one did it. But there's always someone who will step up to fill those shoes. There will always be someone there. And hopefully, I think that's the line in Pirkei Avos, right? B'makom she'ein ish yishtadol lios ish. If there's no man there, then someone has to try to be that man. And maybe they won't do as well. It doesn't matter. You try to do whatever you can. And number two, they began traveling back and found themselves in an area of water. Said they wouldn't worry about these things. They thought to themselves, what's going to be with the Be'er? What's going to be with the Anani HaKavod? HaKadosh Baruch Hu immediately showed them, don't worry, Eretz Nachale Mayim. You're going to be in lands filled with water. You don't have to worry about anything. And that, I guess, was something of a solace for them when they were entering Eretz Yisrael. When they were entering Eretz Yisrael, they didn't know what they were going to find. Who knows if this land is really going to be good for them? They knew that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had suggested it, and they weren't like the Meraglim. They knew it was going to be good. But how do we know we're not going to have to work like dogs trying to get water in Eretz Yisrael? After all, Eretz Yisrael is not a land that rains rains a lot, and we're not talking about a land that's filled with rivers. How do we know? HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed them. I will give you everything you need, and that's the idea behind it. Okay, then there comes Rashi, and we all know the famous Rashi. Rashi says the reason why we put the breaking of the Luchos next to Aaron's death is simply put to show you how difficult it is to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when a great tzaddik passes away. A great tzaddik passing away is similar to HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowing the Luchos to be destroyed. Baal HaTurim says, when a Talmid Chacham dies, everyone is considered his relative, and everyone tears Kriya. Just like Chas V'Shalom, if someone would see a Sefer Torah being burned, or Chas V'Shalom, a Sefer Torah being destroyed, everybody would tear Kriya. Halachically speaking, you may have to tear Kriya even if you just see a Sefer Torah falling to the ground. You may have to tear Kriya on the spot. But if a person, for sure, if it's destroyed or burned, Chas V'Shalom, if something like that happens, a person will have to tear Kriya. So too, Chas V'Shalom, if a great tzaddik passes away, a great, great tzaddik, everyone is chayav to tear Kriya. Yeah.
So
there's a big shiloh about what to do nowadays. The honest truth is, halachically speaking, when a relative passes away, when your Rebbe passed away, what you call your Rebbe Mufak, then yes, you would tear Kriya at that point. You would have to tear Kriya. Where, on which side, is it like a father and a mother that you tear upon your heart, or if it's like the other relatives you tear on your right side, that's already a different issue. But luckily it would be there. When we're dealing with Gedolei Ador, a Gadol Ador, then you already have a Shiloh. What would be considered that Gadol Ador? Like, what would be considered that way? When Rav Yashiv passed away, do you tear Kriya? When Rav Avadi Yosef passed away, do you tear Kriya? When Rav Nelson Tzvi Finkel passes away, would you tear Kriya, etc.? Like, things like that. That's the problem. That's where it comes iffy. And that's why there's almost like a heter. I don't want to say it's a heter. It's almost like as if people don't do it. The minig in Klal Yisrael is not to tear Kriya because of that almost we're not positive.
But if it was your Rebbe.
But yeah, for sure. Or if you're part of that group, for sure. Like if a Hasidic Rebbe would pass away, then all the Hasidim should tear Kriya. If it's somebody you were allowed, I remember by Rav Nelson Tzvi Finkel, I went to my Rebbe immediately. I hadn't been close to him in the past 6 years before that, but I'd learned with Rafinkel, and I was in his chaburas for 2 years, but he wasn't my Rebbe Mufak, and he wasn't one of my close Rebbeim. He was just somebody that I was able to get close enough to that I was able to go in when I wanted. So is that considered? I had that question. So I did tear something, but I didn't tear full Kriya like I probably should have. But it was already a shiloh in me. I wasn't sure. Yeah, what were you going to say, Noah? Ramosha Feinstein, Yaakov Kamenetsky, something like that. Technically you could use the same shirt in such a case. But yes, you would have to. It would sort of be like seeing the Chorban over and over and over and over again, Chas V'Shalom. But yeah, that would be the idea. But again, it seems like the Minig in Klal Yisrael is not like that. There are very few tzaddikim that really tear Kriya by the Gedolim. I know there are certain people that I will tear Kriya by when they pass away. And one of them is because of the amount of letters that I wrote to Rav Chaim Knievsky. I know what I'm going to do. I didn't have a relationship with Rav Yashiv, but I had a relationship with Rav Chaim, my Rosh Shiva, my Rebbe. It would be those. It should never happen, but if it happens and before Mashiach comes, and yeah, those would be the types of situations where it would be there. But you have to know what to do and how to do it, etc. And that's, I don't know, that's a difficult thing altogether. But Rashi says exactly that idea. On the other hand, in Moed Katan, Chaf Heyam and Beis, it says the following. Hashem is happy when the soul of a tzaddik comes to Shemayim. Now hold on a second. Isn't that a contradiction to what we just said? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sad and upset when a tzaddik passes away. But here we say HaKadosh Baruch Hu is happy when his soul comes up to Shemayim. How do you answer that up? So Ron Leib Steinman says that's all. And Ayelus HaShachar says, when a tzaddik fulfills his tafkid in this world, and he does everything he's supposed to do, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is happy with everything he did. He's ecstatic. This person did everything. What else could I have asked from him? He did everything he was supposed to do. However, there's no guarantee that anybody will be able to do that. Sometimes they're successful, sometimes they're not. While he's alive, while the tzaddik is alive, it's not yet known. Tzaddikim have the rutzon to do what they want, and we're not positive they fulfilled their tafkid. Only when they die and are no longer able to do anything in this world, that's when we assume that their tafkid was fulfilled. That's the idea behind this. So it's like this. It's painful for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to not allow the tzaddik to go forward. Because every time the tzaddik lives for longer, it's painful. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants him to do more and more and more good deeds, more and more mitzvahs, more and more tefillos for Klal Yisrael. But when he passes away, he's happy because he knows But the idea is that by that point, the tzaddik has fulfilled his tafkid completely. So there's two different points, right before he dies, and then right after he dies. He's upset, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is upset, sad, however you want to put it, right before the tzaddik dies. But afterward, there's a happiness that this person, this soul, gets to be up in Shemayim. That's the idea behind it, how he understands it. The Dorash David says, what does that mean? It's a davar kasha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a hard thing for God? Nothing's hard for God. There's no such thing as something like that. Nothing's difficult for Hashem. But the answer is, it's a different world. When the luchos were broken, it changed the status of Klal Yisrael forever. Klal Yisrael didn't have, let's say, bathroom breaks before the luchos were destroyed. Klal Yisrael wouldn't forget the Torah before the luchos were destroyed. Once the luchos were destroyed, everything changed. The whole world changed. And that's difficult for a Kadosh Baruch Hu. We have to make a brand new world, a brand new world for them. It's not that anything's difficult. It's that it went awry from the plan. Everything's off a little bit from what it was supposed to be. And so too when a tzaddik passes away. When a tzaddik is around, he's able to keep people in check without them even knowing that he's keeping them in check. And when Chas Shalom, a tzaddik passes away, then something's completely different. That's the idea of the difficulty for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a different world that Hashem doesn't want to have to deal with because he wants the world to be straight and narrow, and it can't be when the tzaddik passes away. So our final idea, what are the lessons that we're supposed to learn from over here? What lesson are we really supposed to get out of it? The Ksav Sofer, the Chasam Sofer's son, says, you know, people might think that when a tzaddik passes away, what's the big deal? He's 103 years old, 105 years old, 98 years old. I mean, what else is he doing? He's in the hospital most of the time anyway. Rav Shach Zatzal was in a coma for many of the years at the end of his life. He wasn't able to do anything. Well, what's the difference? If at 98 years old, a person passes away, when he's already a little bit, you know, a little bit out of it, what difference does it make? A 103-year-old, how much more could they have possibly done? It should be only happiness when an 103-year-old passes away. Baruch Hashem, we had him for 103 years. That's what we should daven for. We should say, like, that's an amazing thing that we were able to do. So when you see a Rosh Hashiva or a big Rav passing away, says the Ksav Sofer, you might start thinking to yourself, you might say to yourself, well, what's the big deal? What's the big deal? What are we really missing out on? Do we really need somebody else around there? Do we really need somebody like that? Is that such a big deal? I don't even know if I could cry for him. He lived an awesome life. What else is there to do? To that, the Ksav Sofer says, yes, there's a replacement. As we said before, there's always going to be somebody who's going to step up. There's going to be someone who's going to take the other person's shoes, and somebody else will be that person. Somebody else will be the man. But you don't realize what the difference is. You don't realize what the difference is until later. Elazar stood up and took the place of Aaron. But was Elazar a Kohen, Aaron a Kohen? No. As great as Elazar was, he was never Aaron a Kohen. Whoever took over from Moshe Rabbeinu, Yoshua, was never as great as Moshe Rabbeinu. He was the moon to Moshe Rabbeinu's son. They're just not similar. You can't compare the two to one another. There's nothing there. That same idea is about the luchos. Yes, we got another pair of luchos instead, says the Ksav Sofer. But are they the same as the first luchos? The first luchos that were broken, is it the same thing as the second pair of luchos? No. The first pair of luchos were going to be in Shemayim. The first pair of luchos allowed you to remember everything you learned. The second pair of luchos, they were awesome. They weren't the first pair. And that's the way the Ksav Sofer says you're supposed to look at every tzaddik. The world is different. Everything is different. As we said, based on the Dorash David, it's a davar kasha. Because something is missing even when he's 103 years old and in a coma. The world is different when he passes away. You might recognize, you might not recognize it. It doesn't matter. HaKadosh Baruch Hu recognizes it. And he's telling us, this is a davar kasha, that when a Talmid Chacham passes away, it's just as bad as you missing out on the first pair of luchos and what the first pair of luchos was. And the Ber Yosef, to end off, ends with just that. Bnei Yisrael made a huge mistake when Aaron passed away. A huge mistake. They knew his greatness. They knew he was a Navi back in Mitzrayim. They knew he was an Oiv Shalom or Odev Shalom. They knew he was there for them at Kriyas Yamsa. They knew he was there for them throughout the travails of the Midbar. They knew that he was there for them even by the Igla Zav. They helped him and they mourned for him for 30 full days. But they assumed they didn't need him when they entered Eretz Yisrael. They assumed that the reason why he died is because they never really needed him in Eretz Yisrael. Aaron was a Midbar leader. A leader for what they were like as nomads in the desert. But as soon as it came to Eretz Yisrael, they needed something different. They needed something different. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu immediately showed them. As soon as Aaron passed away, all Gehenna broke loose. All Gana broke loose. Bnei Yisrael started traveling backward. Bnei Levi started chasing after them. There was a civil war. Many, many people died. As we mentioned in the Medrash, the way this Be'er Yosef is understanding it, everything happened because Aaron passed away. It's almost as if they lost their minds and they didn't even realize it. And all of a sudden they look back and they said, what in the world just happened to us? How could this have happened to us? And they said simply, it's because Aaron passed away. They didn't have any idea how powerful Aaron was for them until after everything happened. They were shocked into submission, and they mourned him again. The Be'er Yosef says differently from what we said before. The Radal said they only mourned the 30 days after the war. Here it says, no, they mourned, and then they mourned again. They mourned a first time, they mourned a second time, realizing there was something that was so unbelievable. And that's the connection again to the Luchos and Aaron's death. Something happened that changed everything about them. That's the idea, everybody. We have the war. We explained how this war happened, how it happened in the first place, and we went through the idea of how Rashi understands it, the Ibn Ezra, how the Ramban understands it, as well as the idea of what it means for the broken luchos to be the death of the Talmud Chacham. Have a good Shabbos, everybody.